Good morning. If you'd like to turn to Ecclesiastes, and it's chapter 12, the very last chapter of that book, and I'm going to read the last few verses, starting at verse 9. And if you have a church Bible, it's on 679. The conclusion of the matter. Not only was the teacher wise, but also he imparted knowledge to the people. He pondered and searched out and set in order many proverbs. The teacher searched to find just the right words, and what he wrote was upright and true. The words of the wise are like goads, their collected sayings like firmly embedded nails, given by one shepherd. Be warned, my son, of anything in addition to them. Of making many books there is no end, and much study wearies the body. Now all has been heard. Here is the conclusion of the matter. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. For God will bring every deed into judgment, including every hidden thing, whether it is good or evil. Amen.
Morning, everyone. Let's turn to pray. Our Father in heaven, please speak to us through these words now. Would they do work in our hearts by your Spirit, that we may live to honour your Son Jesus more. Amen. A lot has changed since the beginning of September. That's when we started this series, a number of months ago now. We could think about globally all the things that have changed, or nationally, or locally. Or we could think about it individually. For a number of us, there will have been some quite substantial changes. Celebrating births, mourning deaths, losing jobs, starting jobs. As a church, a number of things have changed since September. Particularly, we've welcomed a number of new people. You're so welcome amongst us. We're glad you're here. We said goodbye to a number of people as well. Back in September, when we started this series, it was 24 degrees, bright sunshine, and that graphic felt a million miles from any of our minds. I was going to say this morning, now it feels like most mornings. Actually, today is an exception to the rule. But actually, we've gone from a season of light and sun and warmth to a season of mist and grey and wetness. All that time, we've journeyed together through this book. It's a book that has shown us time and time again what life is like. It's shown us that life is short, that life is fleeting, that life is hard to grasp, that it's hard to make sense of, that trying to control our lives is like trying to chase or shepherd the wind. And yet, we've also seen time and again that this life is full of God's good gifts given for our enjoyment from his generous hand. As we've gone through the series, I've chatted to a number of you about how you found going through Ecclesiastes. A number of different responses. Some of you might be brand new today, or you've only been here once or twice. Maybe you're just trying to orientate yourself to this book that you're not used to. For others of you, the book feels quite like the way the book itself describes life. Hard to make sense of. Confusing. For others, this book feels a bit more like art feels like for me some of the time. And by that, what I mean is, I don't really get it, but it kind of draws me in somehow. As I look at various paintings, I find them compelling yet strange. There's something that grabs me, but I can't make sense of it. Maybe that's how you feel about Ecclesiastes. It's drawing you in, but it still just feels hard to get your head around. For others, this book has felt like a hidden jewel. You knew it was in the Bible before, but you've never really kind of grappled with it. And as you have, you're so glad that you have over these past weeks. The book has felt relatable. It's made sense of so much of life. We'll be in different of those categories this morning. As we come towards the end of this book, we come to the end of the series, we need to know that we won't be done with Ecclesiastes. And by that, I don't just mean that we've got home groups coming up on Tuesday to discuss it. What I mean is that this book is one that we need to take with us into the rest of our lives. In this world, we are never done with Ecclesiastes. Ecclesiastes is never done with us. We will never perfectly arrive in this world at the lessons that it has to teach us. But today, we hear its conclusion. But it's actually a conclusion that drives us back to its beginning, to read it again, to keep wrestling with this book. Its conclusion starts with the call to listen to the teacher. Listen to the teacher. As we dive into verse 9, something rare happens. There's only a couple of other places it's happened in the book, and that is the teacher is referred to in the third person. Up to now, the teacher has been speaking as the main voice. He's been kind of I. Apart from at the very beginning when he was introduced, at one point in the middle of chapter 7, and here at the end. I think it's likely that this section is not written by the teacher speaking of himself in the third person, but a kind of editor, kind of summing up the book, kind of bringing it to its conclusion. And the appeal of the writer is, pay attention to what you've just read. Pay attention to what you've just read. And then he gives us reason after reason to do so. So let's go through verse 9. The first reason to pay attention, the teacher is wise. The teacher understands life under the sun. That's the way Ecclesiastes describes this world, life under the sun, and the teacher gets it. He's wise. Throughout the book, the teacher has actually been telling us how hard wisdom is to come by. And then by the end of the book, the editor is saying the teacher has come across this wisdom. Wisdom is hard to come by, but the teacher has managed. And we're told how he managed. He pondered. He searched out. He took his time. It wasn't easy, but he did it. The teacher is a rare person, we're told, because he grasps how the world works. He's wise. So listen to him. And it's not just that he understands the world. It's also that he's able to communicate what he has understood. Again, verse 9, not only was he wise, but he also imparted knowledge to the people. To be a good teacher, you need two things. You need to understand what you're teaching, and you need to be able to communicate what you're teaching. If you can only do one of those two things, you are not a good teacher. Imagine the teacher in a school who has a brilliant grasp of their subject, but no idea how to articulate it to the children. They are not a good teacher. Our teacher is not like that. He both understands his material, he's wise, but also he is able to impart knowledge. He's worth listening to. He's able to communicate, to pass it on. And his words, verse 10, are just the right words. You see, words really matter. Words change reality. For example, if you imagine a wedding ceremony, it is the moment where the words are spoken, you are now husband and wife, that man and woman's reality is changed. They go from being unmarried to married. And what has changed it? Words. Words change reality. This whole reality that we live in, God spoke it into being. If you're a Christian, the reality that you are now a child of God is because God, by his word, gave you new life. Words change realities. Words really matter. And so the teacher has taken care with his words. If you look down those words, that phrase, just the right words, more literally, is words of delight. The teacher has communicated words of delight. He's worked hard to think, how am I going to communicate this message? So you think back to chapter 3, and he said there is a time for everything, and he could have just stopped there. But he wrote that beautiful poem, there's a time for this and a time for that, a time for this and a time for that. Or you think to last week, he could have just said, as you age, your body will start to fail you. But instead, he wrote this kind of evocative image of a house slowly disintegrating. The way the teacher has communicated is with words of delight, words that are meant to grip us, to grip our whole selves. And so we should listen to what he has to say, particularly because, again, verse 10, his words are upright and true. They are correct. They are good. They enable us to live in line with the way that this world has been made, in line with the realities with which we find ourselves in this fallen world. This teacher is worth listening to. This teacher is able to pass on what he has learned. This teacher speaks right things, and he speaks them with a purpose. The words of the wise are like goads, verse 11. They're collected sayings like firmly embedded nails given by one shepherd. In order to understand that verse, we need to know what a goad is, which meant I had to look that up this week because I had a vague sense, but really no idea. I couldn't picture it. The best thing to do is to picture a spear. It's not quite identical, but it's pretty close. That is a long stick with a sharp point on the end. And what is a goad used for? To deal with straying animals. So the farmer or the shepherd or whoever it is, as they're trying to direct their sheep or whatever other animal, if they see a sheep start to veer off, they give it a firm prod on that side to bring it back onto the straight path. That is done for their good. It is done for their protection. Now, it might be painful for that animal, but it is a painful prod from a shepherd who cares, who wants to bring them back and protect them. So too, says our teacher, with the words of the wise. At times, the words of the wise will sting us as we're rebuked for something that we've done wrong, as our selfishness or lack of wisdom is exposed by someone else who sees it and who calls us out on it. We need to be the kind of people who do gently and humbly call others out. Because those kind of words are ultimately the kind of words that protect us. They stop us veering off onto foolish paths. The editor's call is simple. Listen to the teacher's words. Because the teacher's words are essential for your good, for your protection. And especially it's important to listen to them because there are lots of counterfeit words out there. That's, I think, the point of verse 12. Be warned, my son, of anything in addition to them. Of making many books, there is no end. And much study wearies the body. There are so many people who want to offer additional words or alternative words. And we need to be warned about that. Figures are hard to come by for this kind of thing, but they reckon that about 15,000 self-help books are published every single year. Each one of those books, in one way, shape, or form, is setting themselves up to be words of the wise. It is someone saying, I've discovered something, and as long as you hear what I have to say, things will go better for you. They offer one or many hacks to life, ways to make your life better somehow. And it's not just books. There are likely around about 5 million podcast shows or streams kind of globally that are still active at the moment. If you trust their advice, they claim your life will go better. You improve your diet, you improve your health, you take their business advice and you make money, or you learn their money-saving lessons and your money goes a bit further. You hold to their worldview and your life will improve. There are so many voices out there who say, I am wise, listen to me. And of course, some of them will have wisdom to share. But God says the most important wisdom for this world is not in the latest episodes, or the latest reel, or the latest YouTube video, or the latest book. It is in this book. This book that he has given us, which start to finish contains the words of the wise.
A few weeks ago in our Sunday Plus, kind of Sunday afternoons, we were thinking about this exact question. How do we seek wisdom in a world that is full of information? If that's kind of piqued your interest, you can go and listen back to that. Ironically, there's a podcast available. But God says the words of the wise are found here, and we need to find ways to prioritize those, because there are loads of other voices that will claim to be the words of the wise. See, this section, yes, he's talking in the first instance about the book of Ecclesiastes and saying the teacher, he has wise words, but it's much more than that as well. Our teacher in this book, he is either Solomon or he is a man kind of channeling Solomon, but one greater than Solomon has come. When Jesus came into this world, that is one of the ways he described himself. He said, one greater than Solomon is here. He said, I am the ultimate wise man. Listen to me. I'm the best teacher you can find. I am wisdom from God, he says. And this book, it captures his words. Start to finish, the scriptures are either words that Jesus spoke in his life on earth, or they are divinely authored words, that is, words that he, by the Spirit of God, has caused to be written down by human authors. And so start to finish, this book is the words of the wise, the words of the wisest one. And so we need to listen to it. So often people try to discredit this book. It's out of date, they say. It's irrelevant, they say. Well, over the last 12 weeks, I hope you've seen that just one of the books within it, Ecclesiastes, is not out of date or irrelevant at all. Time and time again, we've seen it speak with power into the issues that we face. Life and death, wealth and injustice, work and food, the present and the future. This book will never cease in its relevance. Why? Because it comes from the everlasting, ever-relevant God, the God who knows the end from the beginning, the God who before the world was created foresaw all that would come to be. And so he has inspired these words because these are the words that we will all need for all of our lives. We are to listen to them. Listen to them when they accord with what we already think, but especially listen to them when they don't. It is the point at which they disagree with our instincts or our preferences that they are functioning like goads. That in those moments, what that is exposing is that we are veering ourselves off to some other path, and the words are there to steer us back in the right direction, protecting us from a worse fate, where we wander off and don't live the way God calls us to. Left to ourselves, we will do that again and again and again. We will stray from God's path, and so we will not live well in the world as he calls us to. You see, it's easy to trust words when they agree with what we already think. That's not hard. That's straightforward for all of us. But it can be so dangerous to only trust words when they already agree with what we think. If that is all we're doing, we are not letting these words do what they are meant to, which is also protect us when we are tempted to veer away. We will always find someone who agrees with us. There are that many voices out there, and they are all accessible now. We will always find someone who agrees with what we want to think. But the question needs to be, not can I find someone who agrees with me, but what does the wise one say? What does this book full of the words of the wise have to say? Because it is full of words that are right, upright, and true. And so our call is to listen to these words and be warned of anything that adds or offers an alternative to them. That's the first big thing. Here's the second. We are to fear God. Verse 13, the teacher tries to draw, or the editor tries to draw things together. I don't think he's so much kind of giving a summary of the whole book, but a kind of final charge. In the light of everything the teacher has said, what are we to do? Fear God and keep his commandments. Everything's been heard. That is the final charge. Fear God and keep his commandments. That call to fear God is one we've seen time and again in this book. It comes up kind of 7 or 8 times. And it comes as we understand who God is and who we are. We will grow in our fear of the Lord as we understand that the world is fundamentally broken up into 2 categories. Created things, and in that is us, everything we see, and all of the heavenly powers, and the creature, or the creator, and in that category is God alone. There are ultimately only 2 categories. We sit in this one. God alone sits in this one. And it is as we grasp that more and more that we will increase in our fear of him. As we are humbled before him. As we stop seeing God just as a kind of super powerful human who's able to do things like us but a bit better. And we see that he is in a completely different category from us. So that we fall on our knees, literally or metaphorically, in awe and wonder. And having done so, we do what creatures are meant to do, and that is keep our Creator's commandments. That is the right response. Or as the editor puts it, this is the duty of all mankind. Literally, that reads, this is all the human. This is the human calling. Fear God and keep his commandments. So many people in our world are confused about what it is to be a human. Who are we? What are we for? How can we know? Those questions are at the heart of what so many people in our world are asking. Are we ultimately just creation destroyers who need to be restrained from our evil ways because otherwise we'll ruin the planet? Are we an outdated species that AI is finally about to trump so that the world becomes a better place? Are we whoever we want to be and we get to decide? Are we just a bunch of chemical elements shunted together with some form of consciousness that somehow has appeared? The teacher cuts through that noise. The teacher tells us the true human calling. It is to live humbly before our Creator. It is to see him as great and to see other humans as his greatly valued images. And so, to keep his commandments, to live the way that he calls us to live. There are some Ecclesiastes-shaped ways of thinking about that. Enjoying the gifts that God has given while giving thanks to the giver. Seeking wisdom that comes from him, not assuming that we know better. Holding lightly to the things of this world because he alone is of true value, not the gifts that he gives. Living as those who recognize that our lives are in his hands. And so holding our lives humbly, gently, not grasping at them. And as we do those things, where are we to look? We need to go up to the top floor of the building. That's a metaphor we've used in Ecclesiastes a few times. When you go up to that top floor where we get that biggest, eternal, longest perspective. And as we do, we see beyond the injustices of this world. Ecclesiastes has highlighted that in our world, injustice is both rampant and temporary. And we need to cast our eyes to that point when its temporary nature comes to an end. To that point where justice is finally done. Where all things are brought before the judge. Verse 14, God will bring every deed into judgment. I think we often read the word judgment and we assume it says punishment, and in this instance it doesn't. It says judgment. That is to say, the teacher or the editor is saying there are both positive and negative verdicts that can be given. We see that because we are told every deed will be brought into judgment, whether it is good or evil. Every deed of every person will be brought into the open, whether it's currently in the open or whether it's hidden. How you work when your boss is looking, and how you work when your boss isn't looking, what you say, and what you really wanted to say. And on the list could go. Every single deed from every single person will be brought into the open on that day. And so for those who are not trusting in Christ, that is a terrifying day. Because before their maker, they will be exposed. Exposed for loving God's gifts and ignoring him as the giver. Exposed for fearing others, but not fearing God. Exposed for rejecting his commandments in the way that they live for themselves. On that day, their deeds will be given a negative verdict. And an eternal sentence will follow. It's why the teacher has called us to remember him before death comes. Because when death comes, it will be too late. If you're here this morning and you haven't yet listened to the teacher's call to remember God, to humble yourself before him, to fear him, to put your trust in him, you need to. Because there is a day coming where all will be brought to justice. And on that day, there are two outcomes: a negative verdict or the alternative. And that alternative is wonderfully open to every single person who puts their trust in Christ. That is what this book as a whole, these words of the wise, are here to do. They are here to cause us to find life in Jesus. And if you have, you can look forward to the day that verse 14 describes. The day where God will bring every deed into judgment, including every hidden deed, whether it's good or evil. Why can the Christian look forward to that day? Not because their deeds are any better. On that day, we will be exposed for the wrong things we have done. We will be ashamed of the wrong things that we have done. But we will know that Christ has died for each and every single one of those deeds. That those deeds have, in the words of verse 12, already been brought into judgment. And they were brought into judgment 2,000 years ago on Calvary's cross. Jesus has paid for them already, and so we need not. And so we can look forward to that day. We can look forward to a positive verdict. We can look forward to a day where we will hear those glorious words, "Well done, good and faithful servant." We're going to take 20 seconds or so to just let our imaginations run to that moment. To that moment where, if you're trusting in Christ, you will be received by Jesus and you will hear those words, "Well done, good and faithful servant." 20 seconds to ponder that, and then we'll come back. I don't know what your mind was doing in those 20 seconds or so. Where was it heading? What do you picture when you think of that moment? I picture that moment that you have at the end of a day. You had a long, stressful day. You get back through the front door into your own home, and there's just that big exhale. Maybe literally, but if not, kind of inside, you just go, "Oh, I'm home. I can rest now. I can have peace now." On that day, we will feel that in a way we've never felt it before, because we will truly rest from our labors. We will have found perfect rest. We will be welcomed to our eternal home. On that day, eternity will no longer just be something in our hearts that we're wrestling with. It will be something in our experience day to day. On that day, there will no longer be any wind to be chased or shepherded. On that day, God will finally have straightened what is crooked. On that day, life will no longer be breath. We spent 12 weeks with our eyes pressed against the windows. That structure that Ecclesiastes gives us of spending most of its time pressing our windows against our eyes against the windows on the ground floor, seeing that life is short, that life is hard to grasp. About 7 or 8 times, maybe 9 in the book, taking us up to that middle floor and saying life is a gift to be enjoyed from our glorious Creator. And then it ends on that top floor. God will straighten it all out one day. That's the promise. And it is as we have all three of those perspectives together that we can live life well in this world. Here's one of the problems with the modern world. It collapses everything down into that middle floor. What I mean by that is it tries to ignore the fact that life is short by denying death and kind of trying to put it off and ignore its existence. It tries to kind of minimize suffering and kind of pretend it's not really there. It gets rid of that bottom floor. And that works until you're confronted with suffering or death in an unavoidable way. And then the world has given you no resources with which to deal with those things. You have nothing solid to stand on because the bottom floor has been ignored as long as possible. It's not anchored to anything. Not only does the modern world try to get rid of that ground floor, it also tries to shut off that top floor. And so this world feels claustrophobic because if there's nothing above, then everything is on this life and this world and now. We have to make the most of everything now. We have to eke out every final bit of goodness we possibly can, because if we don't, we've lost our chance. And there is so much pressure on the now because it's all been squished down. Life can't bear that weight because it was never meant to bear that weight. The modern world tries to squish everything down into just that middle floor. It provides us an experience that is not solid and is not spacious. But there is a better alternative. And that's what Ecclesiastes has been giving us the last 12 weeks. And it is giving attention to all three of those levels. It is recognizing that life is short. Being honest about that. And at recognizing at times it won't make sense. But within it, there are wonderful gifts to be enjoyed from our Creator and to receive them as gifts from His hand. Knowing that one day, He'll straighten it all out. So as we finish our series in Ecclesiastes, let's not finish with what Ecclesiastes has had to teach us. Brothers and sisters, continue to let the teacher's words shape your lives. Receive the teacher's words as gifts from God's hand, as you receive everything in your life as a gift from His hand. And fear Him until the day when He will bring every deed into judgment, when all will be joy and nothing will be hevel. Let me lead us in prayer.